In this episode, I interview Sophia Pavia, the trying to conceive nutritionist, about her own recent personal experience with a ruptured ectopic pregnancy. This condition is life-threatening, and although many don't know about it, it's more common than you would think. She shares the unexpected diagnosis, why it happened, what she went through, and advice for any woman to hopefully prevent it or what to do if you suspect it or have gone through it. Trigger warning, we do mention the loss of her baby during this experience, so just know that in case you need to protect your heart at this time. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Having adequate levels of minerals and proper hydration are essential when balancing your hormones, optimizing your fertility, trying to conceive, or preparing for pregnancy. For Dr. Morgan and I, ingredient quality is of top concern, and that's why we love Relight Electrolyte Powders by Redmond's Real Salt. Relight contains Redmond's ancient, unrefined sea salt, which contains 60-plus trace minerals in and of itself. Relight powders conveniently contain the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and even two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These are essential for hormone balance, energy production, and overall wellness. The best part is they taste delicious and they have so many fun flavors. My personal favorite is lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan loves their strawberry lemonade. Visit redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off any of Redmond's products, from their electrolytes to their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, and bentonite clays. Again, visit redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Here's to happy hydrating along your womanhood and fertility journey. Okay, back to the show. So excited to introduce our guest, Sophia. Sophia's main passion is empowering women to embrace their bodies and achieve their highest levels of health and fertility. To her, there is no greater thrill than hearing that a woman who's longed to be a mother has brought home her healthy baby. She earned her nutrition degree from Vassar University, the world's foremost naturopathic medical school. There, she specialized in ovulation and fertility and learned to blend science with real-world experience to bring an expert level of care to her clientele. Over the years, she has helped hundreds of women nourish their bodies and build beautiful families. These days, she is a mother and plant mom, as well as a military spouse. All right, Sophia, thank you so much for coming. You are such a dear friend of mine and someone I look up to as a person who knows so much in this industry of helping women get pregnant.
That's high praise coming from you, Leah. Thank you.
Of course, yeah. And so you have so much wisdom and knowledge to share with everybody. And I want to get into that. We're going to talk about undernourishment in women, which is something we both see, I think, a lot in practice. But first, I know you had your own personal experience, and we share a lot of our own personal experiences on this podcast, as many people know. Okay. And I think it would just be really helpful for our listeners to kind of hear about that experience first, because as you'll go into explain, it's kind of not rare necessarily, but it's just not something that everyone is aware of.
Well, it's just feel rare when it's happening to you. And that's, yes, I think, what's really important to note about this is it's not rare, it's real. And we say that it's sort of rare so that everybody's not like freaking out that this is about to happen to them any minute. Right. But it is very real and common enough to where a lot of people have experienced it. So,
So tell us what it is that we're talking about and then share your experience.
So 2 months ago, I had a ectopic pregnancy that ruptured and sent me to surgery and damn near killed me. And here I am now, not dead, and telling the tale. So I'll give you guys a little bit of a brief version. If you want to hear the full version of like everything I did and all of the things, you can go to the podcast that I co-host called the Food Freedom Fertility Podcast, where I give like the fresh hot take when I was like 2 days out of surgery and share the experience very fresh. But for today's purposes, so I don't take 90 minutes to share the story. I got pregnant. My husband and I, well, I had had an endometriosis excision surgery and a uterine fibroid radiofrequency ablation. For those of you that aren't surgeons, basically what that is a surgeon. My surgeon went in with like a little robot with like four prongs that poke holes in your belly and cut out all of the pieces of endometriosis that were stuck in various and sundry places around my abdominal cavity, reproductive organs, intestinal system, and such. And then I've had this big old fibroid on my uterus for as long as I've been a woman. So we discovered it when I was about 12 and it was really little. And then it turned into this big noisy problem in my first pregnancy. And then it turned into sort of another bit of an issue when I was immediately postpartum with my second baby. So right after I'd birthed her and was birthing the placenta, it became an issue. But other than that, she's just sort of chilling. Like I get heavier periods than most, but I'm not, you know, living a horrible life. I don't have like many, many fibroids. And when I say it's big, it's like the size of like a lime. It's
That's pretty, I mean,
it's pretty big, but there are gals out there with like grapefruits and basketballs and like their bellies are distended can hardly eat because of these massive fibroids. And that's not what I'm dealing with, thank God. But a lime on an organ that's the size of a pear is sort of like big, you know? And so
it's totally big.
Anyway, so I had this ablation where the surgeon sort of zaps the blood vessels that service this fibroid in hopes that she'll starve and die. That's not what happened. So about 6 months after all this surgery and everything, I went in, and I got the go ahead to stop preventing pregnancy and to start trying again if we wanted. And I had ovulated just a few days before that, and we had not been preventing very rigorously. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I even could be pregnant this cycle. Like we weren't trying, but we didn't like do much to prevent. And so I got a scan. I had a nice corpus luteum, you know, looked great. And then, so the month rolls on. This was December. Christmas time was when my period was due. So Christmas Eve, I took a test, negative, started spotting that day, felt that sort of heavy uterus periods coming feeling. And then Christmas Day, it was like full flow. And I took another test and it was negative. And so I wasn't sad because it was like, yeah, it would have been fun to tell my family I'm pregnant on Christmas Day. Like, who doesn't want to do that? Would have been nice to not have to try to conceive again. Like, who wants to do that? And so it would have been great, but didn't happen. Wasn't sad. Kind of didn't give it another thought. Just maybe a, oh, well, like sort of the, oh, well, you get when like your grocery store is like sold out of the sour cream you like or something. It's like really not that bad. And so went on with life, had a full period, like multiple days of multiple soaked period products, like full period. And was the only difference is I was using tranexamic acid that cycle to try to staunch some of the heavy bleeding I have from when the fibroid. And so it wasn't as heavy as a period as I usually have, but I was using tranexamic acid every few hours. So wasn't really that surprising, but it was certainly a full period, like multiple days of bleeding and bloating in full pads soaked with blood. So I bring this up because so many women are like, I had my period and I found out I was pregnant. And when you really dig deeper, they're like, yeah, I wiped and saw blood on the paper twice. I had my period. And you're like, no, lady, that's not a period. But, you know, people just don't know. And they think anytime they see blood coming from between their legs, it's a period. And So I'm exemplifying what a real period is. It's actual like multiple days of multiple soaked pads. And yeah, that's what I had. So life rolls on. Now we're in the first week of January. And according to my calculations, I had ovulated a couple days prior, though I must say I didn't see much fertile cervical mucus, and I didn't track my temperature because I put my temp drop somewhere and I still have not found it, honestly, but I also haven't looked very thoroughly. So it's somewhere in my house where I don't know, somewhere nearby. So I didn't track my temperature. I was just going off like cervical mucus and sort of how my body felt. And I didn't really have much fertile mucus that cycle, which has happened before for various reasons. And I just didn't think much of it. So anyway, a couple days go by. I feel this weird swollen feeling in my belly, which sort of feels like how you feel when like you have really bad like gas indigestion and your belly just feels like bloated and painful to the touch. And so I had that going on. And then later in the day, it suddenly became this like really bad period cramp feeling just on my right side and was accompanied with some bleeding. And I was very surprised by this. So I took it easy the rest of the day and tried to sort of reason it away with like, well, I was on an antibiotic for like a dental procedure I'd had. Maybe that was what was causing like the GI sensitivity. Who knows where the bleeding's coming from? I emailed a couple like doctor friends and was like, what do you think this could be? And they're like, maybe your corpus luteum ruptured. Like, that's super rare, but it can happen. And maybe it's that. But yeah, I'm like emailing with someone. They're not like, well, let's look at your blood work and how do you, you know, look at everything. They're just sort of like in between patients being like, hmm, but don't know. Could be this. Keep me posted. Send it off, you know? And so, that night, I'm talking to Caitlin, who co-hosts the podcast with me, is also my best friend. And I was like, have you ever had anybody have this? Like weird spotting, cramping, plus like my milk had really dried up. I was still nursing my baby. My milk had really dried up, which she's like over 2 years old. I'd been through endometriosis surgery 6 months prior. Like my milk had taken a hit like through all of this anyway. We're mostly just comfort nursing at this point. It wasn't really for nutrition. And so, but like my nipples were sore and I was like, this is weird. Like something's happening to me hormonally. So Caitlin asked me, well, did you take a pregnancy test? I said, yeah, I took two earlier, you know, when my right before my last period, which was like just over 2 weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago was when I had my negatives and then had a full period. Like there's no way anything is in my uterus, like after that amount of bleeding and like clotting and everything else. And she was like, yeah, that's what I'm worried about is maybe it wouldn't be in your uterus. So why don't you take a pregnancy test if you have one? And I think the Lord was just speaking to her and like showing her something that I was totally unwilling to consider. And so I took a test and like before the pee had even saturated the whole strip, it was like positive. Hugely positive. And I was like, this test is broken. Like there's no way this could be. You know? And so I stick two more in that pee-pee and they're positive, positive. And I was like, what the hell? So I go downstairs to my husband with these like horrifically positive tests. Like positive line is darker than the test line. And so I was like, I'm pregnant. And he like laughed and hugged me and kissed me. And then we sat down and he was like, how could this be? And I was like, you know, we're like looking at the calendar and trying to figure it out. And we kind of landed on, okay, this is one of two things. Either this is like a freak miracle from the Lord. And during, because we'd only had sex like one time. And that would have been like 5 days prior, like since my period. So we were like, either this is like one for the medical texts and this is like a, you know, freak instance or this is an ectopic and something's wrong. And so, you know, talking to my pretty religious family members about this. They were like, it's a miracle. And I was like, maybe, hopefully. I'd love for that to be the case, you know, but I don't know. Something, I feel like something could be off about this, but I feel like something could be off about freaking everything. Okay. Once you've gone through like trying to conceive and complicated birth and helping women with fertility and being in the pregnancy loss community day in and day out, like your intuition is real, but so is your imagination. And so,
and anxiety and
you can't just let, oh, I feel something be the queen of your decision-making. So I kind of was like, I'm going to do my diligence. God gave me a brain. I'm not going to pretend that, you know, I can't think and I'm going to just go off of whatever mystical, spiritual connection I have with God. I'm going to also look to what I know to be true in science. And so I'm going to get an HCG and I'm going to get an ultrasound to see what's going on. Because for those of you who don't know, once your HCG reaches above 2000, there really should be something visible in your uterus with our modern technology. So if your HCG is over 2000 and we don't see a gestational sac or a fetal pole or really just a gestational sac, we're just looking for evidence of baby. We don't need to see an actual little gummy bear floating around in there because it's too little at this point.
Right.
But is there, has your body made a sac, a placenta? Like, is there something growing? So if you suspect an ectopic pregnancy, we always look at an HCG. Is it over 2000? And imaging. Is there a gestational sac within the uterus? Because if we don't see either of these things, then it's going to tell us one thing or another. So if the HCG is lower than 2000, well, let's keep an eye on it. If it's not doubling every 2 days and we're not seeing a gestational sac developing, you may have an ectopic and we need to treat that.
Yeah.
If we are, like, you know, the HCG is over 2000 and we see a gestational sac in the uterus, hooray, a pregnancy is underway. Now, anything can happen at any point, but we're at least got, you know, two boxes checked to pregnancy is normal as much as we can at that stage of pregnancy.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to go to the emergency room because it's January.
Yeah.
And everybody's disgusting. I'm sorry. Humans are gross.
It's so hard.
And it was just nasty. And so I didn't want to go there where everybody's like barfing into bags and open mouth coughing and trying to get more drugs and screaming and carrying on because they have no emotional regulation skills and that's the ER's fault to manage. And I didn't want to do that. So having a license here in California, I just wrote my own lab orders and went and got my HCG drawn and called up my buddy Sergio, who owns a private ultrasound clinic.
Oh, I love
and said,
Sergio.
Can you get me in today? Oh, you know Sergio. All right. Shout out to Sergio at Sono
Health.
He's
the best. I know. I miss him.
Anybody who is, you know, looking for some imaging doesn't just have to be baby. Sergio's the dude. So I call him and I'm like, are you in? Can you see me today? He's like, yeah, come meet me here at noon. So I go in and as I'm walking in, my OB calls me and she's like, it's the on-call doc from her office. And he's like, okay, what's going on? And I told him and he was like, you need to go to the ER. Could be ectopic. And I was like, well, I don't really want to do that. So I drew my own labs and I'm going to go see imaging. He's like, that's all well and good. But what are you going to do when you see something bad? You need somebody who can put, you're going to do your own. You got methotrexate in your purse there, gal?
Right.
No? Like, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to have to go to the ER. You need to get with someone who can put these things together and treat you.
Yeah.
And I was like, all righty, that's fine. Well, then I'm about to walk into Sergio's. And honestly, I trust him more than whoever the hell is in the ER anyway. Because guys, the ER sucks.
I know.
It sucks really bad. Does. Nobody stays there long term. It's like where you go to, at least some doctors and nurses and stuff like thrive off the chaos and they stay there long term. But support staff, like sonographers, respiratory therapists, like techs. They don't stay there. This is like their first or second stop after school in order to get on to doing what they really want to do, like working in telemetry and cardiac or like whatever. It's like the stop you do on the way to going where you want to go, because it is brutal.
Yeah.
You're going from crisis to crisis. It's understaffed. Anyway, so I was like, I trust this guy more than I trust whoever's going to be in the ER. Anyway, so we go in, Sergio's taking a look. He's like, well, your uterus is empty. So let's look at your left ovary. Okay, left ovary is looking good. Okay, let's look at your right. Oh my God, look at that.
No.
That is not good. That's a gestational sac on your ovary / jammed in your tube.
Oh my gosh.
It's bleeding.
So scary.
You have to go right now to the hospital.
Yeah, because for people who don't know, that can rupture, which it probably did with you.
It was already partially ruptured, but it's only going to get worse.
And I can't, it's life threatening at that point.
It's life threatening. You will continue to bleed until you die because your baby is desperately trying to stay alive. Your body is desperately trying to keep that baby alive, and it's going to sacrifice you. He's going to sacrifice himself. No, Ron, you can't. This is what my body was doing. Okay. It was like wizard's chest.
So funny.
In my ovary, in my tube.
If
you're
not
a Harry Potter fan, you're like,
it's like, what are you doing?
And I was like, well, do I have to go to the ER? And Sergio was like, not me, not Hermione, you have to go to the ER. And so I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So I got to call my nanny and be like, you got to stay late. I got to go do this thing. My husband's coming with me. So we go there. It's horrible. Go to a different hospital that the doctor who did my endometriosis surgery is at that day. So I go there, except she's in the OR treating other people. So she can't come see me. So I see another doctor. They do all the things and decide, because my HCG was less than 4,000 and the gestational sac measured less than whatever it needs to do, and ding, ding, their sonographer saw no bleeding and no free fluid, which was a lie because Sergio had seen it.
Right.
But this jabroni in the ER didn't see it. And our ER doc was like totally unwilling to look at the imagery that Sergio had provided.
Oh my
and
gosh,
even then,
so
it's
annoying.
Like, yeah, I know. It was bad.
I've had horrible experiences in the ER as well with family members. And personally, it's just terrible.
It's a bad place to go. Depending on the situation. I'm glad it's there.
Yeah.
But it's not well run.
Yeah.
So the doctor says you're a good candidate for methotrexate, which is a really strong chemotherapy drug that basically interrupts the process of cell replication and division.
Yeah.
So if you have a baby inside you, it will stop growing and it will die. Mm-hmm. And my baby had already died at this point. And so the point was for my body to stop pouring nutrients into this thing that is to this, you know, dead baby. I hate to say it like that, but that's the truth of it. And so make sure you put a trigger warning on this, would you?
Yeah, I will.
So I'm like, okay, so, you know, what are my options? And he's like, no options. Either you take this drug or we take you to surgery right now and you lose an ovary and a tube. What do you want to do?
Gosh.
And I was like, okay, well, we'll do the drug. And he's like, okay, that's what I recommend. But I want to tell you, this is not me giving you a shot and sending you on your merry way.
Yeah.
You need follow-up because this does not always work. So I'm going to give you this shot, and it's two huge shots in each butt cheek. And this friggin' hazmat team comes in and like, because this is an extremely toxic drug.
Right.
And so they give you this shot in each butt cheek and they tell you like you have to be on a liquid diet for the rest of the week in case we have to do an emergency surgery on you at any point. You need to have a follow-up every 48 hours for the next several weeks until there is no evidence of this pregnancy anymore.
Wow.
And you have to do this. Like you can't not do this. You can't just take the shot and go home like you could die.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, gotcha. So he says, okay, now you're going to follow up on Friday. This is Wednesday night. He's like, you're going to follow up on Friday. Talk to your doctor. She's in the ER right now. She's been looped in on all this. You're going to go to her clinic on Friday. Her clinic director has set this up for you. And so go in on Friday. And I had a feeling, I was like, you doctors don't know anything because you're just, you don't manage your own schedules.
Yeah.
And so you're like, yes, I'll be there. You don't know where you're going to be. You know you're going to work on Friday, right? You know you're packing your lunch and putting on your scrubs. But like where you're going, you don't know. You don't know because you're going, as soon as you walk out of this room with me, you're going to go see the baby who's not breathing. You're going to go see the stroke victim. You're going to go see the multi-vehicle crash and people's bones poking out of their skin. Like you have another crisis waiting for you one room over. And so you're not going to remember to like go to your front desk person and be like, what's my Friday like? Can you fit this lady in? You're just going to make a promise to this other doctor and say, oh yeah, send her in on Friday. I'll be here. Yeah. You don't know where you're going to be. Get out of town with that. And lo and behold, that was the case. So no one was there on Friday. No one could see me. So I ended up going back to the ER. And thank God I did, because the rupture had really started bleeding at that point. And I had hemorrhaged about a liter of blood into my own abdominal cavity by that point. And
oh my gosh.
So I ended up needing emergency surgery. My husband hadn't even gone with me because I was I was like driving to a doctor's appointment. So he's with our kids.
Right.
And the doctor's appointment office calls me and is like, I'm so sorry. Go to the hospital that your doctor's at and go get admitted through the ER and she's going to check you out. So I was like, okay. So I did it. And they found that I was bleeding internally, rushed me into surgery. My husband got there a couple minutes before I went into the OR and they had to remove the tube. They got to save the ovary. They were able just to sort of cut off the piece that was bleeding. And then,
they had to remove your tube.
They did have to remove the tube. Yeah, the baby was stuck.
I didn't realize that. Oh my goodness.
And want to know why? You ready for this to flip a 180 on you here? Here's the big twist, the big reveal, everyone. Okay. Remember that fibroid I was going on about? Well, Miss Thang got so big, she smushed the tube. So the tube had gotten squished. So a little bitty sperm could get up, but a big old baby couldn't get out. So that's what had happened. One valiant gentleman found the egg and made this problem. No, the fibroid is what made the problem.
Wow, that's
the baby
so
was
crazy.
Never the problem. The baby was loved. The baby was wanted. The baby was everything. The fibroid was the problem. And so the baby got stuck. The baby got smushed. The baby couldn't make it. And the fibroid was to blame. But at the time of the surgery, my uterus was just so vascular that removing the fibroid at that point was unwise.
Yeah.
And removing the fibroid really at any point would mean a lot of things.
Yeah.
It would mean I would need to wait at least a year before trying to conceive. And then I would have to have a cesarean birth, which is really not too much to – I mean, Leah's done it twice. Look at this baby she's got right there.
I know. Like, if you hear him snoring, this is, I'm sorry.
And I'm sort of like you in a way where it's like, no, not a C-section, which is like, I need to chill. You know, like people have babies this way and it doesn't have to mean so much.
I know. It's hard.
But it does mean a lot to
it does
me
mean
right
a lot.
Now.
It does. I mean, it's not anything you would ever want to choose personally. At least.
But it is something that people choose. And they choose it without batting an eye. And they choose it without tears. And they choose it without fear for the future. They just like do it because their doctor's like, oh, well, oh, baby's too big. Baby's too small. Baby's in the wrong position. baby mm-hmm. is this, baby you're is too that, early. I'm yep. bored. You're too, late. C-section. You're too early, you're too late. I don't like your face.
C-section. It's true. I know. It's crazy.
Like Oprah, you get a C-section and you get a C-section. And it's like, you know, we're sort of mocking it here, but like, it has it has significant risks to mother
and baby.
It does.
And it's like, it's harder, I think, for people like us who know so much, you know. Yeah. I feel like if you don't know as much about the risks and or the complications long term, I mean, like when I see a patient, let's say I'm working on gut health, you know, the first thing I ask is, were you born vaginal, born C-section? How many antibiotic rounds have you had? Because I can tell you so easily the trajectory of the life most likely that they're going to have health-wise unless something shifts. And it is really hard being a person who knows all that and having to go through a C-section. I mean, right now I'm in the midst of doing deep dive research on the microbiome of trying to fix it. But there's vaginal bacteria that like you can't necessarily get back that are like anaerobes that are not something you can just take in a probiotic. So it is tricky, like not only for like the actual surgery, but for the repercussions of baby. And at the end of the day, for something like my situation, I mean, I honestly don't know what else would have happened. Maybe if I had had more time legally, but it's a hard thing to choose ahead of time to be like, yeah, I'm going to do that.
It is for people that know what we know and have worked in what we've worked. Right. Like I used to work in the NICU. Take a look around. Everyone there had an induction that led to an epidural that led to a C-section.
Yeah.
Pretty much all.
Yep.
Working in physical therapy, which is what I wanted to do originally before I became a dietitian. Pediatric physical therapy, 98% of the kids in there born C-section.
Yeah.
Tongue ties, oral problems, food aversions, picky eating, nursing problems, C-section, C-section, C-section babies. And we are looking a little bit at like a chicken or the egg situation. You know, a lot of times this baby was sick in utero and had issues. So the C-section was necessary. And then what do you know? Baby had issues after birth as well.
Right.
Because it's not, you know, just the way that it was going to be regardless of how baby was born.
Right.
It's not set in stone that your baby's going to need these things, but we just see it more frequently that that's what happens. And birth isn't broken. Letting it unfold naturally is protective of your baby. And then sometimes things go wrong and you need help. And that's what C-sections are sort of for. But not everybody sees it that way. And I maybe the whole point of this long diatribe on C-sections is that I maybe need to chill and embrace that maybe I'll have to have one to have another baby. Maybe you will too. And you had to chill to get this going on. And boy, did we watch your journey unfold and everything like that. But the point is, I just didn't want to select that unless I had to.
I totally get
it. So I didn't get the fibroid removed, nor would it have been ethical. She would have had to do like a hysterectomy. And so when I was going into surgery, I was like scared and crying because this all came to me at once. Your baby died. You have to have this surgery to save your life. You're hemorrhaging. We're going right. And it was like a NASCAR pit crew, like descending on me. They're like, what's your blood type? What's this? This and sign here and all these things. And like, it was stressful. Crazy because then it was like, I was in the OR within a few minutes. It went so fast. Wow. And so I met with the surgeon and she was like, no one told me any of this. Like I was in surgery with another patient when my front desk, like had somebody come into the OR and say, do you know what's going on with Sophia? And she was like, what? And it was like, no. Okay, get her here now. And so she went out of that surgery, like sewed that lady up, came and got me and fixed me. It was like so crazy. But what was great is she used the same robot as I did for my endometriosis surgery. So I don't have any new scars.
That's awesome.
And they're just these like little bitty, like 1 centimeter scars. I got 3 of them on the outside and then 1 in my belly button. And the recovery was not like a gut and cut. It was like very minimal invasive.
Good.
But anyway, so I was scared going into the surgery and I said, okay, first thing, save my life. Second thing, save my ability to have other kids.
Yeah.
And she was like, I will.
I want to cry.
I know. I was like, save my fertility.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, don't worry about that. And I was like, well, doctor, I have had patients wake up from the surgery in full menopause because the doctor took everything.
Right.
And she went, well, they didn't have me as their surgeon. And we didn't. And so I was like, okay. And then right after that, I had to sign a paper for a blood transfusion. My husband was like, a blood transfusion? He's like, I'm her same type and titer. You can take my blood. And the nurse is like, I'm sorry, what was your name? Like, what? Who? Okay. You know?
Yeah.
Thanks. We're not going to just scoop some blood out of this guy here and put it in her. You say you're her husband and that's all well and good, but believe it or not, the blood we give to people is tested and treated, and we're not just going to do some sort of siphon
bloodletting
gas tank situation. But my husband has seen a lot of combat.
Yeah.
And on the battlefield, you do that.
Yeah.
And so he learned how to do that.
He's like, I can do it. I don't even need you guys.
That's what he freaking said. He's like, I can do it.
Wow.
And they're like, yeah, we've got people for that. Like, we're – and also, like, we can't just have some guy that could have, like, diseases or whatever.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, I could have done the same thing. I mean, we had the same 100%. Concern, like, because I gave birth in the middle of COVID. And, you know, we just – we're like, if you need blood, Mike's like, I want them to take my blood for you. You know, it was like – but I learned then, too, about the whole process is you have to have donate – because Mike donates blood all the time. He's like a super donator or whatever, and he always finds out where his blood went. And I'm like, I need you to, like, earmark one for me in case I ever need it. I'm like, I want your blood because I know you
– I know, right?
I know your life.
Well, my husband's not really a candidate to give blood because he's worked in weird countries around the world and –
yeah.
Been exposed to God knows what. But, you know, who knows whose blood I'm getting, you know?
Yeah. Either.
Anyway, I ended up not needing a transfusion, so
good.
That's nice.
Thank good.
So then they wheel me into the OR, and they were brutal. They were wild in there. Like, I lay down, and the anesthesiologist looks at my giant swollen belly, and is like, is your belly tender? And I was like, yes. Yes. And she pressed on it a little bit. She's like, is it hurt when I do this? And I was like, oh. And then she just, I don't remember what she said. She turned her head and was like, to somebody. And then they like leaned over me and put the mask on and just said goodbye.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
It was like when they saw how distended and tender my belly was, they were like, wind it up. I'm like, here we go.
Yep. Isn't that amazing that
get this rolling.
That the anesthesia can happen that fast. That happened with my second birth too. And it's just like 1 minute you're there and the next you're gone. It's like, whoa. It's wild.
Well, I didn't know you had to be knocked out for your second birth.
Because I had – the baby wasn't coming and they're like, your cervix is swollen. You're literally not going to have a vaginal birth. And then they're like, let's do this really calm, beautiful, family-centered C-section. I'm like, great, because that wasn't what I had the first time. And then they go to do my spinal, and the spinal doesn't work. And they're about to cut me, and I can feel it. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, don't cut into my abdomen. I can feel it. And they're like, oh, really? We're going to have to put you under. So I didn't get to be present for my C-section, and my husband wasn't able to be in the room. He was livid. Because apparently when you're unconscious – you no longer need a support person. So a support person cannot be in the room. So he wasn't there to see the birth. Yeah, it's like a whole thing.
Man, the dehumanization of babies.
I know.
Maybe like, you don't need the support person.
I know.
What
it's
about
like my
this
baby
other person?
Needs a support
your
person.
Your baby. What about your baby?
I know. He was so mad. And I didn't know any of that. And so I wake up out of the surgery and I have no pain management because my spinal didn't work. I had just been put under for the surgery. So when I woke up out of that, I had no pain management. I had just had a C-section when I didn't want it. It was like a whole thing. It was really sad. Yeah. You can see
where'd
why
you go? Were you at St. Al's or St. Luke's?
St. Luke's.
Yeah. Of them.
Yeah.
I've worked both.
Well, now they, now we have like $52,000 worth of medical bills that our health share is not really covering. So it's been a whole thing. I know you've been through way more. This isn't about me, but just in general, I would say we've both been through some medical stuff this year, and that sucks. I'm so happy you have insurance. Because you're probably still on.
Yeah, my husband is retired now, so we still get full benefits. But you get
still that good, thank God, because going to the ER, apparently, is very expensive. Know that.
Yeah, that ER visit was $18,000.
Yeah, my birth
I had to pay, like, I don't know, $300.
Yeah, for anyone listening, even if you think you might not need it, this would be my advice, is to just have catastrophic insurance just in case. Even if you're, like, healthy and you're like, I don't need it. I'm never going to need it. I never go to the hospital. Things happen.
You never know when some drunk driver is going to smash your ass, you know? Like,
yeah, or you get pregnant. I mean, like, you know, you're just having sex, get pregnant. It could turn into that. And so, yeah, that's my public service announcement. I know it's expensive. For me, we're self-employed. We don't have anyone paying for insurance. So we're like, we'll do a health share. It'll be better. And they pay until they don't. And then they don't necessarily always pay a lot. Or the hospitals are marked up. Like, no birth should be $52,000, in my opinion. That's insane. But I digress. Okay, so back to you.
Come on, government efficiency. Come on, lower these hospital bills.
Crazy. Okay, so back to you. So they press on your abdomen. They put you under. You're just, like, out. And, I mean, yeah, what happened after that?
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Did you know that 97% of women in the U.S. take a prenatal supplement, yet 95% plus are still deficient in key nutrients? My favorite prenatal is from a company called Needed because they dose nutrients at levels to not just meet the bare minimum as most prenatals do. They actually use form of nutrients in dosages that allow mama and baby to thrive. Needed actually approached me years ago and asked me if I could help them design the perfect prenatal because they knew that the current prenatals available were not actually helping women. We spent over 3 years diving into the research and understanding what practitioners are seeing and what women actually need at this important season before we formulated this amazingly supportive option. It's no wonder over 4,000 practitioners now recommend Needed, something I am very proud of. If you have followed me for a while, you know that prenatals and optimizing nutrients starts long before pregnancy, so no matter where you are along your fertility or motherhood journey, Needed is the brand I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, back to the show.
Wake up as a one-tube wonder and come home. And my nanny had watched the kids again because that was supposed to be her day off. She was at school, I think. And my husband had to, like, I called him when they told me you're going into the ER. I had to call him and be like, meet me at the hospital. I'm going into surgery now. His deaf ass was like, what? And I was like, come to the hospital. I'm going into surgery. And he was like, I can't hear you. What did you say? And I was like, don't say what again. Come to hospital. And so then he did. And so he had, like, he'd just been with some friends of ours. And they were like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, you are going through this. Let us know if we can do anything. And I was like, you can do something. Come on over. Like, watch our kids. Yeah. So then they watched until my nanny could get out of school. And then she came and, like, put them to bed and everything that night. And so then that was that. And so when I woke up from the surgery, my surgeon was like, you're fine. You're good. That fibroid has got to go. We have got to cut that bitch out of here. She is causing problems. She's what caused this.
Yeah.
So I was like, shit. So now I'm on a journey to try to heal this fibroid enough to where I can get pregnant again without having to have the surgery. I've done it twice. I mean, come on. You know, what's one more? And technically, I've gotten pregnant 3 times, but she sabotaged that third. So going to try.
And is there more risk? Like, is it bigger now than it was with your previous 2 pregnancies because it has grown during pregnancy, or has it been about the same size?
It's shrank down after each pregnancy, maybe not as small each time.
But there's no risk of extra hemorrhage or anything if you have a vaginal birth?
There is. Mm-hmm. But those things can all be managed.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, there's no hemorrhage from a vaginal birth that's going to match the blood loss of a C-section. So you go kiss my patoot if that's what you're worried about. You know, and then I can always have my husband do a field transfer.
There you go. Transfusion. Yeah. Have him like filter that blood a little bit, get some of the spirochetes out of there.
Oh my God. He doesn't have spirochetes. Get out of here.
Just saying, if you've been all over the world, you never know.
Spirochetes are germs, just so you know.
Yeah. It's a type of like Lyme and things like that. These hidden sneaky infections. I'm sure your husband does not have that, but just saying, who knows? Never know.
Anyway, so that's the story. And here I am now. Part of the recovery that was so difficult is I woke up from it with this rattling, wicked cough. I don't know what they did with the ventilator, but
I had that too. Mm-hmm.
Both my lips were split. I had a cut on the roof of my mouth. Yep. And then I had this deep mucusy cough.
Yep.
And coughing with a belly full of holes, no bueno. It was not easy. And so then that about 2 weeks after surgery, and I had lost a ton of blood and been on a major immunosuppressant with this methotrexate. And so my kids got the flu, which for each of them was like, you know, a couple days of like a snotty nose and a little fever and then sort of like a cough that lingered, but not too bad. And then a couple days after they got it, I started getting a little, starting to feel like I'm getting it. And I got knocked out. I mean, I got a double frontal, double maxillary, double sphenoid sinus infection. It was so bad. And so I had to get treated for that. And then I finally started getting better. But it was a month that I was down and out.
Yeah.
And I've been fragile since. We had stomach flu go through our house and I got it worse than my kids. And so I've just been sort of delicate ever since. It's been like a long road coming back.
Yeah. And can you talk to people who don't know about methotrexate, can you share a little bit about what that means for future pregnancies? Like how long do you take it and, you know, the folic acid?
So I got Yes. I got a singular dose of methotrexate. And the way that it works, the mechanism of action of this drug, is it blocks your cells from using folate to replicate. So folate is necessary in production of energy as well as in the mitosis of new cells. And so when the folate is disrupted, cells can't divide. So this impacts your ability to make more blood, which is what I had to do because I lost a lot of it.
Yep.
And your immune system and everything else. And so being really depleted from all of this and then having that drug makes you just very susceptible to illness. I only got the single dose, but it was a humdinger of a dose. They give you a whopping dose of this stuff. Yeah. And it takes 3 months for it to leave your body completely. So I'm still not out of the woods with it yet. You have to kind of quarantine yourself for the first 2 weeks after you get this injection. You have to use a different bathroom than your kids. You have to flush twice. Mm-hmm. They don't even want you having like saliva, like getting on your kids. Like don't give them like a bunch of kisses on their mouth or anything because you're going to be secreting this drug. Your sweat, your pee, your poop, your vomit, your blood, your spit, your breast milk. I had to wean my daughter in one day. Oh, I couldn't nurse her anymore.
How are you doing emotionally with all of this?
Well, I brought her back to the breast. Thank you for asking. 2 weeks after the drug, when you're no longer like secreting it, I brought her back to the breast. I got the approval of all of the powers that be and started nursing her again. And I'm making probably like a friggin' teaspoon of milk per boob, but we're doing it. We're doing it. We're back, baby.
Oh my goodness. Crazy. Yeah. And then because of the folate being gone, you probably typically they say to wait a couple months before trying again, right? Like you have to build that back up.
3 months at least. And so, but with everything that I went through, 6 months is what's recommended.
Wow.
So in June, we will be hopefully able to start trying to conceive again. And from now till then, it's about building my nutrition, about doing scar tissue work, about trying to get this fibroid to chill, and about just getting healthy and strong and ready for another baby. Getting brave in my heart and in my emotions, being clear about what I want. I've been, you know, I don't want to be entitled and be like, I'm owed another baby, you know, and like we're having another baby or whatever, because no one is owed a child. Children are gifts. Yeah. They are not wages. Yeah. You're not owed a baby because of what you've been through or because of what you've done. And similarly, you're not cursed and, you know, not supposed to have one because of these things either. Right. It's a gift, not a wage. And thank you. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be entitled about this, but I've been overly superstitious, and I'm not a superstitious person. I am a Christian, and that does inform the way that I think about things, but this like sort of superstitious mysticism does creep in, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Where you start being like, oh, I don't want to say that I want to have another baby because I don't want to jinx it. And I don't even believe in that.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't want to like let Satan know my plans or some kind of, you just get this like weird mentality about things. And it's just our human desire to grasp into control. So I'm letting that go. I don't need to control. I serve a God who controls. Mm-hmm. It's not my job. Yeah. My job is to work hard, to steward wisely, and to give generously. That's my job.
I love that.
And so I'm going to work hard at what I know to work hard at. Whatever is, this is what the Bible says, whatever is in your hand to do, do it to the glory of the Lord. So that's what I'm going to do. Steward wisely. What do you know to do to care for yourself and for the people around you? Do that thing. Do those things. Don't be an idiot who's like, oh, well, it's all God's plan anyway, so I'm just going to do anything I want and live my every impulse and not take care of myself because nothing matters. That's not true. And then give generously. Don't hoard. Don't be a miser. Give generously as someone who has an abundance, whatever your abundance is.
That's so great.
You know, financially, your time, your gifts, your talents, give. And so that's what I'm doing in my fertility life right now to prepare for my next baby and be brave and have faith. And that's what I'm doing. So we definitely want another baby.
Yeah. What are you doing? I mean, I know we had a lot to talk. We'll have to just do another episode all about undernourishment.
I freaking knew this was going to happen.
But it's okay because this is important. This is an important topic. It's an important episode. And, you know, for other women who might be going through this, this is something that's – and for people to just listen and know to help other women. Like, I feel like that communal understanding that women should have or that we used to maybe have back in the day where – you know, your friend's going through something and the whole community knows to be like, that sounds like an ectopic pregnancy. You know, this is what I know. And let's have this communal wisdom is so lacking today. So even if someone hasn't gone through this,
I will say, I don't know if they were on the nose about the ectopic pregnancy. They probably would have done something super weird. And they would have been like, the gods need a bloodletting.
I mean, most likely you wouldn't
have
survived.
Do you remember back in medical school when you had to do like medical history and like learn about the history of medicine? And it was like all these crackpot like dentist barbers that were like, that were like, oh, Elizabeth has, you know, illness
they were giving heavy metals for treatments like mercury.
Right.
And
they're like, she didn't respond to her fifth infusion of mercury.
But then they did another bloodletting. But in my mind, I'm like, it's probably because they were getting the heavy metals out.
And then and then God took her life.
Yeah.
And we're like, it wasn't the mercury dose and then the bloodletting that did that. It was God.
Moving I know. On. Well, and then the homeopathy came around and they thought that was crazy when they were like doing leeches and bloodletting and all of that. And it's just like, oh, the medical world has been through a lot of things for sure. I mean, ectopic pregnancies, yeah, back in the day, way back, I mean, they're probably, you probably wouldn't have survived.
No.
You know,
wouldn't have survived.
The medical
and
marvel.
Isn't that crazy? Like, this is the first real time in my life that I've needed medical help.
Yeah.
Every other thing I've ever had, you know, I've had like cavities before that, like, you get them filled or repaired or whatever. But were you going to truly die if you didn't get that fixed? I've had stitches. I've had, you know, sinus infections or whatever, and taken medicine at various and sundry times in my life, gone to the doctor for things, and they've certainly improved my life, but I've never had it like save my life. Like, I would have died had it not been for this medical intervention. This is the very first time in my life that I've ever had that.
Has anything shifted for you since having that? I know for me, having to go through the conventional medical world as a very naturally minded person had rocked a lot of my paradigms and stuff. And I feel like I'm a different person at the end of it than I was at the beginning. Do you feel like that's shifted anything for you?
Maybe not yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, this is all pretty fresh and... Yep. I mean, the thrill of surviving was very real. I woke up from that surgery like on cloud nine and spent like a week of my life just all smiles and joy and like kissing my husband and my children and just my mom, and my community was like bringing me meals and sending me things. And I got endless bouquets of flowers and fresh designer pajamas, and like people were showering me with love and gifts and prayers and everything like that. And it was a beautiful community and is a beautiful community. And thank you to everybody who was and is a part of that. But there was like the thrill of survival and the marvel at the fact that this is possible. And, you know, I don't know, like, given my husband's career and the life that I've lived alongside him, we've seen a lot of untimely death and a lot of catastrophic injury. And so I think my paradigm may have already been shifted because I have been so adjacent to this at many times that I wasn't... I don't know that something really needed to shift within me. My reasons for not wanting to go to the ER were because it's icky, not because I had some sort of dissonance or, you know, or that I was, you know, it was some sort of crisis of belief. It was, you know, that didn't really occur for me. And my dad beat cancer this past year with chemo and radiation. And so I was, and I've seen people do that and helped people through that. And so I just, I guess I had already had a bit of a shift, or maybe the shift had, it never shifted. Like, the development was always there. And, and just in being walking beside my husband in these past, you know, 7-8 years we've been together, and seeing so many young widows and lives lost for various things, and or maybe not even, because not everybody died, thank God. Like, we've got some friends that were crazy injured overseas, but are alive.
For anyone who doesn't know, your husband was in the military. I'm sure people like.
Yeah,
he was in that, but I don't think it was ever like said explicitly.
I don't know if you could see this wall next to me, but you could like see some of like his like
tiny things. Like,
we're in the war screen. Room. No, this is just the quietest room in the house. I'm in here.
Yes.
But yeah, he did 14 years in the Navy and was medically retired for a catastrophic injury that he himself suffered.
Yeah.
So I guess it wasn't. Maybe a shift is coming of some kind, but I don't know. It is, you know, to face your own mortality, but you have to do that so much in his career. Like every time we changed commands or he changed commands, we had to like meet with the lawyer and like review your will and your trust and your last wishes and your medical directives and everything like that. And they make you make all these decisions down to like, who do you want to accompany your body when it comes back home? Who do you want to tell your family that you've died? Who do you want to make your medical decisions? Who do you want to make your financial decisions? Are they the same person? Like, at what point do you want an advance directive? At what point do you want a DNR? At what, you know, like, what do you want this to be? Down to like, what song should be played when we're laying you in the ground?
And like, oh my gosh.
They truly, like, if you're listening to this, Lady Gaga, you've got to come sing Hold My Hand from the Top Gun movie.
Right. Exactly. If he dies. That's your request.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, hopefully he won't be dying in a hail of gunfire rescuing a hostage anymore. You know, hopefully now he just, like, dies of old age. So, Gaga, you're off the hook.
Yes, I hope so.
But truly, when these like national heroes die rescuing these high value hostages from high profile situations, Toby Keith really does come sing Proud to Be an American or whatever, like at your funeral.
Right.
This is real. So we have had to do that a lot. And then we've been to services and been a part of people's things that like one of my neighbors passed away 4 years ago. In the line of duty. And he was like ridiculous at the time. He was like 26 years old and he was going to like a training command in Germany. Like who would think that he was gonna die in a cold weather training accident? Like nobody thought that. How could that be?
Right.
But he did. And one of the things he said is he wanted to be buried with his mountain bike. Oh. And so then we had to do it.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
And we did That's it. Sad though. Which is like crazy while we're like doing this. We're like, what are we doing? But like, this is what he said. And he was sort of like joking at the time, like talking to his brother, like after the fact, he was like, dude, I thought we were like laughing about it as we were writing that down, but he had to do it because he was changing to this command for me. But this happens. And so I've already been close to the veil between life and death. And I've been with mothers as their babies passed.
Right.
I've been in the room with as this happens. And so I don't know. I guess to think of my own mortality, it has sort of given me another layer. But as a mother, at the same time, if I gotta die trying to give life to my baby, what a fucking way to go. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Take Gosh, me, it's so you crazy. Know, like what a heroic, like, you know, my husband is like, if I got to die to rescue this target, this, or not target, hostage, not target, hostage. So if I got to, if I got to die so that others, I mean, that's their whole mentality, so that others may live. Right. And that's his whole thing. And so if that's what I got to do, that's what I got to do.
Wow.
And if I got to die giving life to my baby, what a way to go.
Yeah.
We all got to go somehow. And of course, I would love to die as a 99-year-old woman surrounded by my great grandkids and all those things. But if I have to pick a second choice, it would be so that I could give life to my children. And so I am 100% going to roll those dice again, and I'm going to try not to die. I mean, but if I, dude, if I die, this episode is going to be hilarious. And
oh my gosh, hilarious. I don't know if hilarious is the word.
If You'll I become die instant. In labor, I'm sorry. This is just,
oh my gosh.
This is what's become of me. Okay. You want to, have I changed? Have I become something? Here's the evidence. Is I'm laughing at this.
Right.
And like, we've just had to face a lot of death and consider it. And it's been very close. And, you know, what a way to go. Most people die of like Alzheimer's and heart disease and like boring. I would rather go. I would rather have a healthy baby. Right. That's the dream. Right.
That's the dream.
The other dream is if I have to go somehow, which bar on the Lord returning, we all do.
Yeah.
That would be the way to meet my maker. That would be, you know, one moment I'm bringing forth a life, and the next I'm gazing into the face of Jesus. Doesn't sound so bad. So.
Right. Well, I'm glad it didn't happen this time because there was no viable baby, sadly.
There wasn't. The baby had already passed. Yeah, the baby had already passed, and I didn't want to die. That's true. Yeah. I still don't want to. I want to live, and I want to give, and I want to, you know, use my gifts on this earth and steward my life and my children's lives and be a light to the dark parts of the world. And that's what I want to do. But I think that has maybe been the shift in me, is like coming face to face with my own mortality.
Yeah.
And being like, you know what? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So for anybody listening to this, I will have to do a part two. I'm just going to have you back on for the undernourishment progesterone piece because it's
too
juicy.
Yeah, that was really
juicy.
Morbid at the end there.
No, but I love it. And I want to wrap up with this for you, for anyone going through something like this. Like maybe they just found out that they're having an ectopic. Maybe they're just experiencing right-sided pain and they're not sure. Or maybe they've been through one. I mean, is there any – I know it's still fresh for you and there will be more wisdom that probably comes as time goes on. But is there anything that you would say, like, if that woman was here with you at whatever stage you feel called to share? 100%.
I'm so glad you asked. Okay, sister, track your cycle. Mm. I don't care if you're trying to get pregnant. I don't care if your husband's had a vasectomy. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You have to track your cycle. You have to track your cycle. And I want you to listen to me closely when I say this. You have to track your cycle. You have to do it. You have to know where you are. Because if you're just bleeding and you're like, oh, I'm having my period, humpty bump, here I go in my life, you could die.
Yeah.
This is real. And if you're bleeding at a time other than when you're on your period, this is a problem that needs to be addressed. Now, granted, most of the time it's not a medical emergency, but if you have had a positive pregnancy test and you start having bleeding, you need to go get checked out, sister. You got to.
I know. Morgan and I just recorded a bleeding and pregnancy episode yesterday, which this is so ironic that this is coming up now. Not that they'll necessarily air right next to each other, but yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to think about and a lot to navigate.
Nine times out of 10, it's a subchorionic hemorrhage, which can be treated with some progesterone and ALA, or you could even do nothing most of the time and that's will resolve itself. But if you want to do something, there's great data behind that treatment. Right. Or it's a cervical, vaginal, you know, irritation or a polyp or, you know, there are many non-life-threatening things that can cause you to bleed. But pretty much all of them need some level of treatment. And so you want to go get seen for that quickly, especially if you are early pregnancy and already have that positive test. So going and getting your HCG drawn and looking at some imaging will rule out an ectopic, and these are very low-risk interventions. Yep. I don't recommend that everybody just go get an ultrasound because the wind blows, but in this situation, it warrants investigation. So if you – first step is track your cycle. If you're bleeding at a time other than when you're on your period, red flag, get help. Second, if you are pregnant and you start bleeding for any reason – red flag, get help. If you are pregnant and you have pain, red flag, get help. Okay, these things need to happen and you need somebody who's going to investigate these things with you and make sure there's not an emergency. And right. I will tell you, the pain that I experienced was not the worst pain of my life. And it was short-lived. It was short-lived. It was an intense period cramp for a few minutes. And then sort of just like a tender belly.
Yeah, because we learn in school, you know, that an ectopic pregnancy is very painful. You know, but in our world, any abdominal pain, especially one-sided, is an ectopic pregnancy until ruled out otherwise.
Yes.
But it's so tricky because, like you said, with gas and all this stuff, there are so many things that can cause pain.
That and it, I have endometriosis and a fibroid. Like, what day is there not pain? Like, please.
I know.
Okay, I'm living with this.
It's tricky. They make it seem like it's so clear cut. Like, well, how did you not know immediately? It's like there's so many things that are in that area.
We have different pain tolerances. Yeah. We do. And so what might be – I'm not diminishing somebody else's ectopic pregnancy experience. If you were like vomiting and losing consciousness from the pain,
right.
you very well may have been. I wasn't. Yeah. And I still had a ruptured ectopic pregnancy. So I wouldn't – don't be waiting for it to be the worst pain of your life. Don't be waiting for it to be like your guts are flowing out of you worth of blood. If you're having bleeding – especially bright red bleeding versus like a little bit of brown on the tissue paper. And we're talking about bleeding, not just like I saw a spot when I wiped, but like you have to put on like a pad because you're going to make a mark on the chair you're sitting on.
Right.
You need to get checked out.
Yeah.
So that would be the best advice. Track your cycle. If you're bleeding at a time you shouldn't be, and you know that because you track your cycle, go get help. Because even if it's like a uterine polyp, that needs to get treated. Even if it's a fibroid, it needs to be monitored and treated. Even if it's cervical inflammation, a vaginal infection, a bladder infection, these things need to be treated. So go get checked out. And ask good questions. If you don't know what questions to ask, listen to a few more episodes of this podcast. You will learn a lot about your body and you'll be much more wise when it comes time to communicate your needs to medical professionals. And rule out anything life-threatening. It's not hard to rule out an ectopic pregnancy.
Right, exactly. That's the beauty of it. It's not like diagnosing endometriosis, which is really tricky.
Not
an ectopic pregnancy is very obvious. You just need to go get looked at.
Mm-hmm. Very obvious. I mean,
amazing.
You can't tell from home, but the testing that we have available, imaging and blood test, will tell you very quickly and easily. And they're relatively non-invasive. We don't have to like do surgery to figure it out.
I love
so that's
that.
My advice for you, dear sister.
Oh, thank you for sharing. And thank you for sharing and being so vulnerable with your experience, because I know not very many people either have a platform to share or feel comfortable in sharing. And so we are more in the dark, right? As women, even as a doctor, like I've never had an ectopic pregnancy, so I can't speak from my own experience. So hearing from someone's actual experience, I think is just so helpful. And I think anyone who's struggling with this or knows of someone who's struggling with this, I think you'll be such a beacon of light for them. So thank you.
Thank you. Yes. And I am going to try to conceive again.
Yay.
We have decided we have limits to that. Like we're basically going to be medically healthy. So we're not going to like not seek medical help if I have like polyps or an infection or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But other than that, we're going to pretty much just try to make a baby in our love and in our home and in our marriage. And we're not going to go to any big lengths. We have two healthy, wonderful children already, and we just don't think that that route is for us at this point. So I'd like to point that out when I say we're trying to conceive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to leave you with hope that we are doing this and, you know, and that you can be trying to conceive and still have limits. Okay. You don't have to do everything in order to be, we tried.
Yeah.
You have to do what's right for you. Right. And only you can decide that. I see plenty of couples that are like, look, if it's not going to happen in the privacy of our own home, then we're just going to find another path to parenthood.
Yeah.
And I have worked with couples that are like, unless we are pushing the boundaries of science, medicine, and the very definition of life, mm-hmm. I can't really say that I've tried. Unless yeah. I'm questioning the ethics of what is a human and what is slavery and what mm-hmm. is, you know, life, then I can't rest my head at the end of this and say I didn't really give it a go.
Yeah.
And so everyone and everything in between, you yeah. get to decide what you want to do and what's comfortable for you and what you want your life to look like at the end of your days when you get to meet your maker.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So, oh. There you go.
Well, with that, that's amazing.
Sophia's musings.
Yep. You always have the good wisdom and you always make me laugh, even Listen. When you're telling a sad story.
So, can I tell them where to find me if they yes, like this?
That was my okay. next question. Please tell them all the things.
Yes, listener. I actually have a podcast that I co-host. It's called Food Freedom Fertility, and it's Yay. On all major podcasting platforms. It's where we go into, I'm a progesterone specialist, and making enough progesterone, getting pregnant, staying pregnant, enough progesterone to carry you through the pregnancy, into breastfeeding, all these things. That's what I do. And my other co-host, Caitlin, is the polycystic ovarian syndrome specialist. So together we run the gamut, we see guests, we review research, we do it all. And I also have a Instagram page where I'm giving away even more free information. It's called TTC Nutritionist. Funny. Am I? Thank you.
You are. I think you're so funny.
The things when I think I'm like really doing something great, I get like no interactions.
Oh, same. I'm just like, I
cannot win. And then the ones where I'm like, hey, here's the spoon. I put it in the drawer. People are like, 5 million views.
I know. It's so annoying. It's so annoying. But you're funny. I love it.
Thank you. I try to let
that. You can't be funny if you're not funny. I feel like people are just either funny or not funny, and you're just a funny person, and I love that.
Thank you. You know, humor is how I deal with the darkness of the world in a lot of ways. And
yeah.
I love working with women who are trying to conceive because it is light and life and hope and future mm-hmm. and joy. It is all those things so much. But it's also death and sadness and darkness and sorrow.
Yep.
And death and life are two sides of the same coin. And so if you don't have a way to laugh, you'll just only cry. And so I like to bring light and humor to this.
I love that. Oh my God. I'm making notes here to say where we're going to get quotes. And that's one of them. As you hear my baby waking up.
One-liners. That's what I've got.
I love it. Oh my God. I'm going to just right, bounce. Well, I'm going to get my leg workout in here.
Get your baby going.
Yes, thank you. If you're open, I'd love to have you back. We can talk offline.
Of course.
But there's so much more I want to ask you about progesterone and all of that. But thank you.
Yeah, how to actually help people and not just me blabbing on about my own life.
No, I love it. This is helping. This is helping.
Okay,
thank you.
Well, good.
Pregnancy loss can be devastating, heart-wrenching, and confusing. Many women and couples are left in the dark wondering what to do next. They aren't sure what steps they should take, how to process the grief, or what avenues of health they should explore before trying again. As I have been helping women and couples for many years in private practice and through my online programs, I received many requests for more information on pregnancy loss. This is a big reason why we did this podcast episode, and it's also why I finally made my pregnancy loss guide. This 11-page clickable resource guides you through the different aspects to consider and look into after experiencing a miscarriage. I imagined one of my patients asking, "What do I need to know and do now?" And that was how this guide was created. Throughout the guide, I also share what additional support you can obtain through experts in the field, as well as my own course offerings. Everything was created to support women and couples just like you. If you want to get access to my guide, head to www.womanhoodwellness.com/loss. Again, that's www.womanhoodwellness.com/loss. I hope this serves as a beacon of hope and a useful support along your fertility journey. Sending my love as always.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.